Te reo ererangi o te mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Assalamu alaikum, kia ora, and welcome to In Transit, the series where we centre the many journeys of immigrant ethnic women navigating life in Aotearoa, New Zealand, with me, your host, Hafsa. In each episode, I sit down with women who share their journeys of settling in a new land, the challenges they have faced, and the resilience that carried them through. From cultural clashes to quiet triumphs, and from moments of doubt to deep appreciation. These are raw, honest, and hopeful conversations. Whether you're new to the country or simply curious, this is your space to listen, learn, and connect. Kia ora and welcome to another episode of our podcast. And today I'm joined with another new guest. So I am going to hand over to her to introduce herself.
All right, kia ora. My name is Farah. I have been in New Zealand for just over 10 years, almost 11, not exactly 11. And what I do here, right? I work as an interpreter at the moment. I also help with training interpreters. In addition to that, I'm doing some volunteering in governance. So I'm a board member at a couple of organizations, and because my day job, which is a full-time job, is not enough, I also do online tutoring. So I'm teaching, interpreting, and I guess that's almost all I do.
Yeah, that is a very busy lady.
Yeah, this is about me here. I didn't give you any information about me before moving here.
I think that is my next question about.
Yeah, and this is about just me, family wise. Yeah.
No, I don't think we want to go into family details, but you can tell us briefly if you want to give us an overview of who you've got here.
The most important things in my life are my two lovely children. Mm-hmm. My family, husband, my two daughters, but these two girls are the biggest achievements, because these are the biggest, these two, Yera and Golina, are the biggest achievements of my life. I always talk about them when it comes to me. They made me who I am today. They are a big part of who I am today.
Yeah, so you are the proud mama.
Oh, yes, I am.
That is so nice.
Biggest achievements, really. You know, I've done a lot of studying, I've done a lot of different things, but my daughters have been big teachers for me. Learned a lot, having the normal challenges that parents of teenagers have, but they taught me so much. So they're part of who I am. They're a very big part of who I am.
That is so nice to know. Yeah, so they're all grown up. I'm guessing that's why they are such a big part of your life. And you mentioned being going through teenagers. So I have a teenager.
Yeah.
So, the challenges. So tell us a little bit about, what was your first day in New Zealand like?
My first day in New Zealand, I remember it clearly. We arrived in Christchurch in the evening, and we had already organized accommodation, and I had already enrolled the children at school from Iran, and we'd already organized accommodation. So we arrived, I remember, in Kashmir suburb at the time, and the property managers or landlords, I mean, it was not like a normal property manager, but the people who were looking after the property, there were two retired Kiwi, a couple, a lovely couple. They were waiting for us at the entrance, and because they knew we have young children, I mean, one daughter was 6 at the time and the other one was 11. So they knew we had children, and it was in the middle of winter in New Zealand, in Christchurch. It was cold. So we came from heat of summer in Tehran to cold of winter in Christchurch, and they welcomed us warmly. They had turned on all the heaters and everything around the house, so we would feel warm at the arrival. I remember all the lights were on, and the lady, she had baked some date cake for us. It was warm when we arrived. So that was a beautiful, beautiful first impression that I got from New Zealand. I mean, later I might have experienced different things, but these two lovely people, they really made the best first impression that they could have made. So yeah, we started like very positively, and they welcomed us. And I remember the night we arrived, the lady came and picked me up, took me to Barrington Mall to do some grocery shopping. So, and the following day, they came, picked us up, took us to buy SIM cards, these things. So we were really nicely welcomed, warmly welcomed to New Zealand. And I have a very, very good experience of that first cold winter night, which turned out to be too warm and nice for
Oh,
us.
that is so nice to get, and the way you put it was even nicer in a cold winter, but a warm night.
Yeah, it was really lovely. I never forget it. And I'll tell you maybe later, that became one of the reasons why I joined Red Cross as a volunteer, to be part of the welcoming new former refugees
Oh,
and
wow.
give them the same experience these lovely people gave us.
Ah, right. So let's go back a little bit before the first day then in New Zealand about what was happening in your life before you came to New Zealand.
So, I was a teacher since I was 20. So I was an English teacher back home in Iran, in Tehran. So I grew up in a big, big city, busy, noisy city. And most of my life, I always wanted to live in a peaceful place. So, but I loved Tehran because that was the only place I knew. All my life I had lived there. And I was a teacher since I was 20, and at the age of 30, I became a university lecturer because my background is I have a master's degree in general linguistics. I also have another degree in medical laboratory sciences, but I decided to work in teaching. So I was a university lecturer teaching French language and linguistics, as well as English, phonetics, linguistics, for about 10 years before I, more than 10 years, for over 10 years before I moved to New Zealand. And the reason why I was able to apply under skilled migrant to come to New Zealand was that I was a university lecturer, and university lecturer was on the list of shortages, New Zealand skill shortages. So that gave me, what is it, resident visa. So we came to New Zealand with, I mean, had re resident visas as skilled migrants with two children, me, my husband, and two children. But we had a very good life back home, but we just thought if we could possibly give our children a little bit of a better life, why not? So we thought we could give it a try.
Yes. So that was the motivation to come here. So now tell me more about once you came here and and you came on a permanent resident visa. So how did that plan out in terms of you moving here as being a university lecturer there, a skilled migrant coming in here? How was
No
that
job.
transition?
Yeah, because at the time when we moved, there was no requirement of a job offer from New Zealand. So they just trusted us. It was in 2014 that we came, but we did all the processes between 2012 and 2014. So at the time, the having a job offer in New Zealand was not one of the requirements of that skilled migrant visa. So we came jobless. So with no jobs, but yeah, my husband had a very good, very highly paying job in Iran. So he came here with no job, and my job was not as high paying as my husband's, because I don't know, it's not, we're as university lecturer, I don't know, I think I was not appreciated the way I expected. But yeah, but and the thing is, I didn't work full time. I was a part-time university lecturer because I wanted to look after my children. So, and for some time, I even took a break to take care of my children. So that's how important my children are. So I would never give the time I had with them up to do work. No, no, I spent good time with them when they were like little children, young children. So yeah, we came jobless, and the difference was that we had no jobs, we had no house. Back home, we had our own home, or we owned our own house. We had well-paying jobs, and we came here renting for the first time in our lives, and not having jobs. But then we were able to find some like jobs, and we knew we were ready to start from scratch. We knew we couldn't find jobs as soon as we arrived. So yeah, we were ready for that. And the difference, would you like me to tell you about the difference?
Yes, that would be
It's
good.
funny though. I mean, because I was brought up in a kind of a Western cultured family, not that I'm proud of it, because I think a lot of things related to my culture I was deprived of. But so things in here were not new to me, because I grew up with like Western music. I grew up with watching Western like movies. So it was not really new for me in terms of culture. There was no culture shock. But the difference that we noticed on the first day, I mean the second day, was the difference in pronunciation of English, the way we had learned it and the way Kiwis would pronounce it. And the property manager, they came and they were explaining to us the bins, red bin, yellow bin, and the word, the way they pronounce it was, there is this reed bin, and I said, what? Reed bin, and we would pronounce it as red bin, but the way they pronounced it was as if there was the other way around, reed, e, and then e sound. So that was so funny for us, interesting. So the pronunciation, different pronunciation, I didn't expect it. I learned English since I was 9 years old, and I was exposed to American British English, but not to New Zealand English. So it was just a big difference in pronunciation, although yeah, we learned it quickly. But at the start, I had to listen carefully to not to mix up things. That was one thing. And the other difference was that it was like, of course, more peaceful, quieter, closed. Shops closed at 6 p.m. Back home in Iran, Tehran is almost a 24 hour city. So shops are open at any time in the middle of the night. You can even access doctors, GPs in Tehran. If you feel you're sick, there you have emergencies of hospitals, so many hospitals in Tehran. The other thing is that we have 24 seven clinics accessible to everyone. So you can go to clinics, you can access almost everything in the middle of like after midnight. So that was one thing which was a bit disappointing, seeing that shops closed at six.
Just looking at that in terms of, it was peaceful and quieter, but then you had access to so much in back home. And I can say the same thing about India as well, with the access to stuff.
But because of all my life here, I was looking for this peace and quiet. So I was happy. Yeah. But
There's a give
you
and take,
miss,
isn't
yeah,
it?
did you miss like the busy streets home when you came here?
I think that was a shock for me too, as well. You know, the quietness here sometimes, even now when we go back and come back from
Oh, you
India,
feel the difference.
it I think it takes you a couple of weeks to just resettle into New Zealand, because sometimes it's actually spooky, the silence.
So I loved it. I personally loved it. My eldest daughter, because she was 11 at the time, she hated it. And she said, "Mom, I don't think I can ever live in a city where shops are closed at 6 p.m." And yeah, I remember it vividly. And when that, like the first couple of days, she said, "Mom, there's no way I will stay in this boring town." I said, "Okay, when you turn 18, you can go wherever in the world you want." And yeah, just before she was 18, she moved to Auckland and started university. So, but I really liked the peace and quiet. I mean, it was a bit like scary after six, but yeah, but I loved it still. It was
Yeah.
different, but I liked it.
So there was no did you have the feeling of like a loss from where you came from to here?
Difference, not loss. No, really. Yeah, peace. This peace and quiet. Because as a child, we spent our summer holidays in our holiday home in the north of Iran, which was exactly like Christchurch in terms of the scenery, the weather. And we stayed there for 2 months every year, and I loved that place so much. It was near the Caspian Sea. I loved it so much that I never wanted to get back to Tehran, but we only were able to stay there for 2 months of the summer. And when I came here, I said, "Oh my goodness, I'm reunited with my beautiful Mazandaran in Iran. That's a province in the north of Iran near the Caspian Sea." So yeah, for me, it was just different, but no, it was not like a shock or anything. The shock was more of a reed bin.
And because you were from a linguistic background, you knew more about it, didn't you?
Yes, and I realized that, for example, when the E sound changes into E when there is like the accentuated syllables, I've real figured out, oh yeah, when it's the accentuated syllable, the stressed syllable, when it's what we know as E sound in the standard English that I learned, changes to E only with an X stressed syllable. So yeah, I figured that out quickly.
And that's something I learned now from you.
Oh really?
Yeah, in the
If you look at the stressed pattern, all the syllables that are stressed, if the sound is in British American English, it changes into E in Kiwi English. You can just give it a try.
yeah. So I guess the next question for me then is about, you know, settling into New Zealand for 10 years. How has that life been, and you know, in terms of the challenges or obstacles that you may have faced?
Of course, there were obstacles. The first obstacle was having a source of income, the biggest problem. But we came with a good amount of money because we were required to be able to support ourselves for the first 2 years as migrants. That was the promise we gave to immigration. So we came with a good amount of money, which, of course, just like that, we spent, having to buy a car and the high rent we were paying at the time because it was a like big house, and we didn't really know. We chose that house because we wanted our children to go to this specific school, Kashmir Primary, because so we first chose our children's school and then we rented something from one of the like from the parents of school. School helped us actually, and school, I forgot to tell you, the school people w welcomed us as warmly as the property managers. So on the first day when we went to school to say hi and to enroll children, they welcomed us actually and greeted us in Farsi. They had learned that. So that was another beautiful, warm welcoming. Okay, let's go get back to the challenges. Language wise, we didn't really, apart from the getting used to Kiwi accent. So me and my husband, we both were okay. Our daughter, biggest eldest daughter, she had enough English to be able to handle things. Galina didn't know much English, but she learned it very quickly. She was six. Jobs, yeah, I found a teaching French teaching job quickly. Right, the second week I was here, it was a part-time job though. My husband, from a ma high managing position, he started working in a bakery. Yeah, I guess we just wanted to have jobs. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how did he find that? Like, how was his experience
It was
with
good
it?
actually, because back home he also had a business long time ago. In addition to his job, it was he had a bakery business with his brother-in-law, so he was familiar with how things were done. But at the time, he was the owner of the business and he was the boss of his business. But here, he was just a worker. Yeah, he was okay with it because we just wanted to get onto the ladder of jobs, so we wanted to start doing something as soon as possible. So I started teaching French. He started working in a bakery, night shifts. I mean, early morning shifts and night shifts. And then after that, the other challenges, apart from trying to find jobs, I don't think I really know. I personally, if you're talking about me, of course, with children, getting used to eldest daughter, because she had a very good experience going to school. So helping her get used to the way things are here. For example, one challenge I was facing was that at school they offered us buying secondhand uniforms for our children. My daughter f found it as an offense, as a very offending statement. She said, "Mom, how do they say that to us?" But you know, I could understand, but for her it was really offensive. Someone telling her you can buy secondhand. You understand when I say how we feel about secondhand. But now we're okay about secondhand. That was a good lesson we learned. But yeah, so trying to help her get used to and adapt and adjust to New Zealand, because for me, adjusting is really easy. Adapting myself is really easy. So it was most, Angolina was too young. She was adjusting. I needed to be there for my daughter while she was adjusting. For me, no, I never faced, to be honest, from in the like beginning years, I didn't face any discriminating behavior. No, I don't think so. Or maybe I didn't realize it because I'm too positive for that.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah, because sometimes it is also about your mindset, isn't it? The
Yeah.
mindset that you come in with.
Maybe I was too positive for that, but I didn't really. All I could, the people were that I encountered at the time, they were really nice, mostly, almost all of them. So no, really, yeah, it was just the biggest challenge was finding a job, which at the same time we wanted to be for there for our children while they were adjusting to New Zealand. So we decided that one of us should do part-time, one of us should do full-time. So at the time, I was doing part time. My husband was doing full time, and then we switched. He was doing part time. I was doing full time because we wanted one of us to be there when the children were finishing school. So it was really important for us to drop our children to school and pick them up from school while they were adjusting. We chose actually that we didn't want both of us didn't want full time jobs. Although I'm not sure if we tried, we might not even have been able to find it, but at least it was our choice. We didn't want to be fully absent from our children's life. Because at back home, I was the parent who was home most of the time, although I was working, but I spent a lot of time. But we didn't want them to miss out on that while they were adjusting to a new country. So yeah, both of us we kind of took turns. But yeah, I my second job in New Zealand, in addition to volunteering, I started volunteering with Shakti for English language partners. I was a home tutor for a while. Then I found a job as a manager of this after school holiday program. It was something new for me, and I really liked it. It was enjoyable. For 3.5 years I was there, it was kind of like a full part-time job. It was not a full-time job, so it gave me some time with children. It was good. It was a good experience. It was way different from what I did. Life was different. And the other thing, difference was that in New Zealand we had to work harder compared. My husband back home in Iran, he worked hard too, but for me, I worked harder than I did work. I used to work in Iran.
Yeah. So coming back to, you've mentioned a bit about volunteering and you mentioned Red Cross as well. Tell me your motivation to get involved with volunteering. And then, you also spoke about Red Cross volunteering. So we'll come to that after that. But yeah,
Yes.
motivation to go into volunteering and why you still do it.
At the start, I really wanted to go into volunteering to learn about how things work in New Zealand and to gain some experience. So my at the start, volunteering for English language partners was just because I wanted to get to know things. So I became a home tutor, and they had some a little bit of training too, but I with my teaching background, it was really so easy for me to do that. But then with Shakti, I don't know, it's strange when you start volunteering, because back home there were some NGOs and there were some volunteering possibilities, but not as much as there are here. So in Iran, I didn't really do volunteering. My volunteering was volunteering to look after my children and not work. But in here, volunteering, suddenly I started. I mean, I liked it when I started doing the English language partner thing. And then I decided to do the Shakti thing, not because I was looking for a job. I just felt I liked it. I came across this organization while I was looking for some answers to one of my friend's questions, because she was having some issues with in her marriage. So I started looking, and then I realized it was Shakti Ethnic Women's, I don't know, something, Women's Refuge. I volunteered for them, and I really, it felt so good that I continued it for a while. But after I found like this managing job at this holiday after school program, I had to say goodbye to them because it maybe kept me too busy. But I loved it. And then I continued later on, which I will explain.
Yeah. And so now you're still volunteering with Shakti.
No, not anymore, because I've my like because the cost of living doesn't let me have free time to volunteer, really, honestly. Working until 6 in my day job, and after from 6:30 till 11:30 in the evenings, teaching, tutoring. But no, not with Shakti. I then later on I volunteered with the Red Cross. I had a full-time job, but I wanted to do that. It was just before mosque attacks, it's the March 2019, and I remember I also wanted to teach my daughter that, because she always questioned that. She said, "Oh, mom, why do I do things for people when you don't get paid?" So we went together. She was 16, and I took her with me to the trainings, and I asked if she could join me, and they said she cannot be a volunteer, but she can join you. So we attended the sessions, the training sessions together, and what I had in mind was to give the same welcoming experience that I received here to newly arriving people. And the idea that I had was to offer warm food, warm meals to people when they arrive, because I always had that date cake that was freshly baked out of the oven for us waiting. So yeah, I joined. I had a full-time job at the time, but I still wanted to do that. So I gave my evenings after 6 to Red Cross. And families who arrived after 6, they had other needs like supermarket shopping, like things that the day volunteers or the day caseworkers, Red Cross caseworkers, they didn't have time to do. So I was the evening shift volunteer, and I loved it. And then I did some governance volunteering in governance. I joined the board of Interpreting New Zealand, the organization I'm still working for. I joined the board of trustee of my daughter's school. But I had to say goodbye to them because of my two jobs, paying jobs. And but I'm still retaining the board of trustee, board of no, sorry, the board of Christchurch Resettlement Services. I'm on the board of Christchurch Resettlement Services, and I love it. Because for a while I also worked for, I will tell you about my CRS job later. Whenever you want me to.
All right.
I enjoyed volunteering. I still do if I have time. It gives me this sense of, I don't know, it's not selflessness because I enjoy it. I can't say I volunteer because I'm a selfless person. No, I think maybe I'm selfish because I enjoy it. It's so rewarding that I want to keep doing if I have time.
Yeah, and I think like you mentioned, back home, because life is so busy and you have other things to do, like in our countries, you have relatives you hang out with and
Yes,
all of that stuff.
exactly. And there's not much opportunities. That's the other thing. But yeah, I spend a lot of time with my extended family, my husband's extended family, my children. Yeah, maybe.
It
And there aren't
doesn't.
opportunities.
Yeah, and then volunteering is this thing about why would you do volunteering? It's not a thing that is considered something that you'd get your children to go and do. Like from looking at it from my parents' perspective, they'd go, "Why are you doing it?" Because the mindset is very different, isn't it?
I know, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, my daughter was asking, kept asking me, "Mom, why do you do things that you don't get paid for?" But then it also, but that changed her mind. That volunteering for Red Cross, I think, changed her mind. Then right after we started supporting this family, I mentioned it quickly. Unfortunately, the horrible terrorist attack of 15th March happened. Mosque attacks. And then when my daughter started volunteering, she w volunteered for 1 week to help survivors and victims of mosque attacks. And she, who would never want to do anything, as she said, "Oh, I would never do things without getting paid." But before that, we started this Red Cross course and we started supporting this family from the 1st of March. And after the 15th of March, she said she went to the hub after the mosque attacks. She every day for 1 week, she skipped from school. She went to the hub. She went to people's houses. She cleaned people's houses, survivors' houses, because people were coming to visit. And she said she washed dishes. She like with her friends. They actually realized what I meant. She realized what I meant by but by the joy in helping people. She did
No.
it, yeah, for
Oh,
1 week.
good
And she didn't
on
go to
her.
school for 1 week.
Wow. See,
Sorry,
oh, that is so good to hear.
when I'm talking about me, my children are part of me, and I always come back talking about them.
And that's fine. Maybe there's no set rules for how you talk about things. So yeah, now you've spoken a little bit about different things. And I think what I want to know from you is if someone asked you to describe what life in New Zealand is like, and so what would you say to them in terms of, let's say, you're also trying to compare it to your home country, Iran, what is the difference?
The difference. Of course, it's as I said, it's safer, more peaceful. You can make plans here back home in Iran. You know what's happening in politics. It's not just the problem with Iranians' government, it's the world as well. So different things happens. Either overnight in Iran, prices change, but in New Zealand, things are more stable. We have extended family, and which I really miss. Of course, we don't have them here, and this is one the main thing for me. The biggest loss I have is just the people I love that and I left behind. I don't really miss places. I love everything about New Zealand, and I don't think I will go back to live in Iran. I will go for visit, but no, I have chosen for New Zealand to be my home. But Iran is my past, is my the love I had and I still have. But what I really miss is the people I love. Oh, yeah, that's I think I really, if I had those people with me in New Zealand would be the perfect land for me.
Yeah, true,
Yeah,
Anya.
but yeah, this unpredictability back home in Iran, and then there's more predictability here, so you can make plans here easier than you were able to make plans back home because things would change overnight.
So if you were talking to someone who's planning to come here, and what are you going to suggest to them and how to prepare for New Zealand?
Just if they're coming from my home country, my hometown, I would tell them to be prepared for boring nights, boring evenings, apart from Friday nights, Thursday, Friday nights, it's just boring. If you're okay with that, I'm okay with it myself. And be prepared for not accessing specialists. Doctors, specialists, whenever you want, because back home in Iran, we have access to specialists, much more access to specialists than here. I'm happy with the medical system here, but sometimes you just miss being able to see a specialist whenever you want without having to pay $400. So yeah, that these the medical system, which I'm happy with. I like the fact that people first go to GPs, but sometimes I think things are slower than back home. The quality is okay. I have no issues with the quality of the medical care. It's better sometimes, depend when it comes to respecting human beings. But the medical access to medical care is way easier than New Zealand, unless in New Zealand you have medical insurance. Which I don't have.
Yeah, no, I don't think a lot of us think about that.
But that is one thing that I might tell people. Apart from that, I'll just tell them to be prepared to live with your past, but not in the past. I'm living with my good memories, bad good memories. I lost both of my parents and my dear sister while I was here. My dad passed away during COVID. And be prepared for losing your loved ones while you're away.
Oh, that is such a
Yeah, that is
important
something
thing.
that you really need because you don't know whether you can go back home whenever you want. My dad passed away during COVID and I couldn't. And then a year after that, still things were not good enough for us to be able to go back. So yeah, I lost them. That is now I think twice. The first thing I would tell people is to be prepared to lose your loved ones without being there for them. Because that
And
would happen if you might immigrate.
that's something someone else, the other interviews that I've done, someone else has also highlighted that the distance is so big that sometimes you can't guarantee you will be back home.
Yeah, when you really need to. Although technology has made it easy, with my mom, I would speak 3 times a day by using FaceTime. But the physical touch and being really there for them when they need you, especially for us who immigrate, our parents, they tend to grow older. And I left my parents when they needed me most. And be ready to live with that regret.
So many things there, isn't it, that we need to negotiate with ourselves when we take those big movements across countries. So I guess I want to move into the last segment of our discussion now around the discussion around your own cultural identity and how you define yourself now, and is it the same for your children as well?
My children, they remember their roots, and that's good. That's what we really wanted them. Both of them, they respect their roots. They remember their roots, and they have come to kind of like peace with their double culture or identity. I think that's what I think. I'm not in them in their minds, but that's how I what I think. So myself, I know what my roots are, but I'm happy with the person I have become now, and I'm happy with this culture that I'm living in. And the children, they seem like they are doing well now. Even my elder daughter, she wasn't as happy as we all were when we moved here, but little by little, I think she's now. She agrees now that we made a good decision to move. But yeah, we never forget our roots. We're proud of our roots. We're proud of our culture. And one thing about culture, as I told you, I grew up in this Western-like family. And my daughter, when she came here, she started learning more about our roots. She even taught me things that I wasn't aware of about my roots. She even taught me to think back and see, was it good that I was not, I grew up not being aware of traditions and things that a lot of people were aware of? Because in my family, these things did not matter that much. But then she made me double think again, and she made me be more, even more proud of my past and who I am. Yeah, that's why I said they are a big part of my growth.
And that's why you said in the beginning that they taught you a lot.
Yeah, you
And
know, yeah. She embraced her culture, and then I didn't see it as a good thing at the time. I thought, oh, why is she trying to tell people that she belongs to that culture? But then I said, realize, yeah, actually, I should change my mind. And she is just embracing her roots, and that's good. That's a good thing. The expecting our children to adapt themselves to new Kiwi to the Kiwi culture was not a good idea. Although, you know, you would expect your children to adapt quickly, but no, she resisted a bit, and then I realized, oh, that taught me a lot, actually, her resisting to the new culture here. She's good now. She wanted to show people, and when we went to our citizenship ceremony, I remember clearly. I consider myself as a Muslim, but I don't practice a lot of things that other Muslims do. But my daughter, she to the citizenship, they said, "Wear your cultural clothes." And I said, "Oh, I really don't. I grew up with Western clothing, so I don't really wear. I never wore my cultural clothes." But she covered her hair, put on hijab, and she said, "Mom, this is my culture. I grew up going to school, covering my hair. It doesn't matter if you whether you like it or not. I'm coming to the citizenship ceremony with this." And that was so brave of her. Yeah. And
Oh wow. So
yeah. She's my
incredible.
university. I have a degree, and she's sitting here with me. She's hearing
Incredible.
all these things, as well as my other daughter. My other daughter is more like me. She's more adaptable. But yeah, this gorgeous young woman who's sitting right next to me, she's just
Incredible.
out of
That's incredible.
the job. But yeah, but she was a person who challenged me more than anyone else in my life. She was the person who didn't approve of everything I did, just like everyone else around me did. And she taught me, oh, yeah, I should look at myself, and I'm not as good and kind and loving as my parents and my s sisters and my extended family think I am. Yeah. Yeah. So,
Oh, nice. Yeah.
sorry, I
So
always
I'm,
get back to.
yeah, I think my kids are also teaching me that
Yeah,
as
yeah.
they grow up.
Both of them, I'm really proud of them, the way they challenged me. I'm
So I
Okay.
want to ask a few more questions before we conclude. I guess that my other couple of questions are around, having settled into New Zealand, was it easy to make friends and were you
Yes.
accepted?
Yes, for me, yes. For me, yes. Because this is my personality. I don't say it's easy for everyone to make friends, but in New Zealand, I don't know, we lived in the Kashmir community. It was like a more of a community-based neighborhood, similar to, back home, it's more community-based. So in Kashmir, yeah, I made friends with people. For me, it was easy. It was not as easy for my husband, though. But for me, it was easy. Although some people, I've heard people saying, oh, in New Zealand, people don't, you can't make friends with them easily. But for me, I'm not talking about best friends. But yeah, we talked, we got together. It was okay for me.
So generally, you found the acceptance in others that they were willing to
Yes.
kind of
As, again,
make.
maybe it goes back to me. Because I am accepting. I think, yeah, I thought, yeah, people are okay. Yeah, at least that's the impression they gave me. I'm not sure what they were thinking about me when we, because that's another thing that I realized. Sometimes in New Zealand culture, people are very polite, but it's not necessarily how they feel about you. So maybe part of it might have been the being polite thing that I. Because I'm too positive. Ah, okay, they like me.
But that's not our problem because they didn't tell us, right?
Yeah, but I think they are a bit polite, too polite. Yeah, so to show their what's going on inside them. So they like to taste your sweet, the sweet you gave them. Oh, that's so delicious. But what is it? Yeah, I think I that's something. But I still I'm okay with it.
So I think my next question is around because you said, you found friends and you found that acceptance, whether it was just them being polite or in general, you
Yeah.
because of the personality that you have, Farah, around that. My question is, so for you, is New Zealand home?
It definitely is. It is. For me, New Zealand is home. Now, my roots are still there. I brought my home country with me here, so it's always in my heart, but I consider New Zealand home.
And what does that meaning of home? What is the meaning of home then?
Where I feel comfortable, at peace, where I feel I belong. And I do feel that.
Yeah, no, I think that is one of the things that many people battle with is the feeling of belonging. In terms of, and because, and we've seen that through what you've shared with us, that you had a different approach on how you looked at things and had a different perspective. So have you had any other challenges around settling in or how you have integrated the old lifestyle and backing around and the new one here? Is there something that you would like to share there?
Yeah, the only difference was yeah, of course not having the old lifestyle was when I needed to go to work, I left my children to at my mother-in-law's or at my mother's. There was always my sister back home, because I wanted to go to work. I didn't work many hours, but I wanted to go to work in early in the morning. And one thing, my sister, I remember she woke up early in the morning. She came to my house just because we didn't want the children to wake up when they didn't have to. It was summer and I wanted to go to work. So of course these are things that like with challenges. But the other thing is in here I have to work harder or work more hours compared to back home. I didn't have to work like as many hours. So yeah, these are some of the challenges. Sorry, what was the question?
Was asking about how you integrated what you had from back home with what you learned here.
don't know, just okay. I'm just because I've always tried to be myself, and then I bring myself and but my whole package to my work and to the society here. So I don't know. It's always easy for me to integrate into anything, and I as a package, I integrate myself and my package with the society in
It
Israel. I don't know how. It's just ha it just happens. It's easy for
just
me.
happens, so it comes
I don't
very
know.
easy
I'm
for you.
always open to change it. Change.
All right, so my last question is going to be around, what advice are you going to give to someone who is trying to settle into New Zealand community and the country here?
Oh, maybe I might tell them to, if you made a decision, if it was your decision to move to New Zealand, you know, some people, if you're from a refuge, from a refugee background, it's not your decision. You know, if it was your decision, embrace it. I need to be polite. If you made the decision, so embrace it. If you don't like it, just change your decision. That's what if I didn't like it here, I would go back. But I know for some people it's not possible to go back. But for me, if you made the decision to immigrate, just embrace this journey. Be patient. Things will change. Be patient is another thing that I will always tell people. Be patient. Of course, it's hard. Even if I chose to come here, there were a lot of challenges, but being patient, you know, helped me tolerate the difficulties and try to connect with people, find a community, any community. It can be the diaspora from your home country or from any community that you think you can feel comfortable with and be part of them. I have a very good contact with the Iranian community as well as the Afghan community because we speak the same language. And I go to the gatherings, to events. And in addition, I also attend any events that are not necessarily related to my home country. Just try to be patient, try to connect with people who you think you can connect. Don't force yourself to connect. But if you look around, you will be able to find some communities or one person or group of people who you can connect with. It takes time. You know, if you want to feel that sense of belonging, it doesn't just come to you. You need to make some effort and you need to be open. These are things. Openness, patience.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, and yeah, I think openness and patience will be the two words.
Yeah, nice. Very nice. I think I've learned so much from your journey today,
Oh.
Farah.
I have learned so much from you already, Hafsa. Yeah, from your openness.
Oh, thank you for
And
that. That
yeah,
made my
and I think
Friday.
you have that power to connect with people no matter who they are, no matter what background they are from.
It's
Thank
very kind of you to say that. Thank you.
you.
Oh, thank you so much, Farah, for sharing your journey.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on In Transit. If today's story moved you, taught you something new, or simply made you feel seen, we'd love for you to share this episode with someone else. Also, don't forget to tune in to Plains Media for the next episode. Until next time, remember, your story matters.